My name is Nick Georges. I'm totally committed to supporting Palestine. I've done quite a lot of actions for Palestine Action, and I've got two Crown Court cases ahead of me in the next month. So with the
Okay,
term.
so why is Palestine floating your boat at the moment?
Long story, when I was 17, I left home on my motorbike sidecar and rode overland to Cape Town, South Africa. I got a little bit lost on the way and ended up living in Beirut for 6 months, which, as you'll know, is not really on the way to Cape Town. The main road into Beirut was lined with dereliction, filth, squalor, derelict concrete shacks, wooden sheds falling down, acres of torn and tattered tents, thousands of disparate, filthy people, mountains of rubbish. I was 17, just out of school. I'd never seen anything like this in my life. Of course, this was the Palestinian refugee camps where the Palestinians had been forced out of their homeland by a Jewish invasion and the Nakba. And I was horrified by this vision that I was saw. For 50 years, I did nothing about it, went past my normal life, got married, ran my business, brought my kids up, got them through college, all the rest of it. Age 64, packed my business up, got divorced, and I thought, right, I've got some time. I'd really quite like to do something about Palestine. I remember thinking so clearly, what the hell can little Nick do about Palestine? Well, it ended up I did quite a lot. I was trained by the Quakers for a year. They sent me out to Palestine, to the West Bank, for 3 months as a humanitarian witness, where on a daily basis, I witnessed the atrocities and the horrors and the pure brutality of the illegal Israeli occupation of the Palestinian homeland. The worst thing that happened to me, and this incident happened 2 years before I went there, but I was taken to the scene of this incident 2 years after it happened. There was a Palestinian man who lived 50 meters away who witnessed the whole incident. And so what he does guided tours around it. It was a standard small house in a village called Duma, well-known incident. And there's a family, a man, his wife, brand new baby, and a 4-year-old boy lived in the house. At 3 o'clock in the morning, a group of 12 extremist Jewish settlers have come down. They've thrown an incendiary device through the bedroom window. The family have woken up on fire. The mother's grabbed the baby out of the cot. They've rushed outside only to realize that they're still on fire, because there's white phosphorus in this incendiary device. When they got outside, the mother realized that in her panic, she's just grabbed the blankets and left the baby inside. The 12 settlers are waiting outside there with machetes, and they've hacked them down. This was quite a stressful, difficult incident for me to take on, to actually be there with the charred remains of the house, the Hebrew graffiti all over it, to where that actually happened, where I was standing just 2 years ago. And this is quite a regular occurrence all the time for the Palestinians and the West Bank there. I got home and I spent 3 years writing to my MP, doing all the peaceful protests, peaceful marches, petitions, signing this, signing that. I gave lots of talks to Rotary groups, Quaker groups, church groups, friends and everything. Gave a talk to 200 sixth formers, showed videos of what I'd seen. And then I was taken to talk by, I was at a Zoom where Palestine Action, who I'd never heard of, gave a talk. And this chap, the founder, I think it was, said that the Israeli arms company Elbit, who I'd never heard of in my life, apparently had 10 factories in this country. Elbit make 85% of Israel's weapons, and they had 10 factories in this country. I was shocked. And he also said Elbit produced white phosphorus, and I was horrified at this. And he went on to say that Palestine Action's aim is to shut these factories down. They do this by occupying the factory roofs, locking on outside, painting the factories in red paint to signify Palestinian blood. And anyway, over the next couple of days, I thought about this. So I phoned him up and I said, look, I just really want to give you my support. Just tell you I support what you're doing. I think it's brilliant. I said, well done for you. And he said, oh, that's good. He said, you're interested in us. Yes. I said, I think what you do is great. He said, oh, well, he said, in 2 days' time, We're going up on the roof of the Shenstone factory where they make the drones, the drone engines. He said, would you like to come with us? I said, you've got to be joking. I said, I'm 69. I can't go climbing about on roofs at my age. Well, he said, that's a pity because we do get older people than you doing that. And then the penny dropped. White phosphorus. Elbit make white phosphorus. And I'd come back from Palestine with PTSD from what I'd seen out there. So I said to him, I said, yes, I'll come. So I did. It ended up at a meeting place with five other complete strangers. With a great deal of difficulty, we managed to climb on the roof of the factory. We were up there all night and most of the next day. And we're charged with doing £90,000 worth of criminal damage to the factory. And we shut it down for almost 2 weeks. So for 2 weeks, that meant those drone engines weren't getting out to Israel. And hopefully that meant some Palestinians had a further 2 weeks of life.
So, can you explain, was it just because you were on the roof they had to shut the factory down, or were you taking other means to make sure the factory couldn't operate?
We're charged with doing £90,000 worth of criminal damage on the roof. We set out to cause disruption, definitely, and to try and close the factory down to delay the flow of weapons to Israel.
You've also had some very strange incidents going into the courts during this process. So when did this happen, and what stage is this at now? Can you just take us through what's been going on in your various court appearances?
Right. Well, just very briefly to add to that, a little while later, we did another action against one of the supply chains of Elbit. And we were then charged with criminal damage of £138,000 to this other supply chain factory. So I've got two court cases going on. In the second one, there are four of us. And there's lots of pre-trial hearings before you go to court. So three pre-trial hearings back. The four of us turned up in court, and as usual with the court, you go into the main entrance. You have to empty your pockets. You have to empty your bag. Your bag and your pockets go through the X-ray machine. You then walk through the metal detector barrier. You go out the other side, and there's a security guard there waiting with a magic wand. And you stand with your legs apart, your arms akimbo, and he waves this magic wand over every inch of your body, which is standard procedure, happens in all the courts in this country, standard safety procedure to make sure that people aren't taking anything dangerous into the court. We then go upstairs, four of us, and the security guard comes up to us and says, right, can you sign this bit of paper, please? So we say, what's this for? He said, you've got to have a body search. So I've looked around me, and there's nobody else in this court building. There's probably 50 people in there, all there for various things ranging from murder to pickpocketing to whatever. None of them are being body searched after the first initial search. So we complained about this, and we're told very categorically that you can't go into court unless you have this search. And that was that. So anyway, in the end, we acquiesced, we agreed, we signed the paper, we had the search, we went into court. And our pre-trial hearing went ahead as per normal. So anyway, a month later, we're back for another pre-trial hearing. And this time we got a plan. We're fed up with this discrimination. It's discriminating against us as opposed to anyone else in that court building. It's intimidating, and it's pure abuse of power. Why should we be singled out? Of all the people going into that courtroom, we're probably the least violent. We're there to stop violence, stop the suffering, try and stop a genocide. We're not there to be violent against anyone in the least bit. It's not what we're about. So anyway, we go into court, and this time as we go into the entrance, we're asked our names. And again, nobody else is asked their names and told to write their names down as they go in, just us Palestine actionists, because they recognise us. So again, we go upstairs. Again, we're served with the same piece of paper. Can you sign this, please? Why? Because you've got to have a body search. No one else is having a body search. Doesn't matter. You have to sign this piece of paper and be searched. So this time we didn't sign it, and we stripped off down to our underwear. Caused absolute consternation in the court, and they called the police and all the usual business. What then happened, the judge summoned us into the courtroom. And he said, look, he said, just get dressed and come into the courtroom. So we got dressed, went into the courtroom, nobody's search. When we went into the courtroom, we had to go up to the room where the defendants are held behind a big glass barricade. We were led one by one into the defendant's room, and we were led straight to a separate room where, yet again, we had to undergo another body search. Apparently, this is quite standard in this court. I don't know this third body search. I don't know, but apparently in that court, everyone has to go through that. So that was, I suppose, a little bit more acceptable. We were then marched back into the defendant's room. Each of us was told where to sit, and a security guard stood directly behind each of us. So anyway, last time we were summoned, so what we then, we spoke to the judge about this at the hearing. The judge spoke to the barrister, and eventually, weeks later, the solicitor of one of the three of us actually wrote to the court explaining that this was discriminatory, it was intimidatory, and an abuse of power. And we got a completely ridiculous, totally unsatisfactory letter in response. So the issue wasn't addressed in any shape or form. So Monday, 3 days ago, we went back to court for yet another pretrial hearing. And so we decided we weren't going to sign this bit of paper. So we didn't sign it. And we said, no, we're not going to be searched. And then we're there basically all day. The case was supposed to be heard in the morning. We didn't go. The clerk of the court came and spoke to us for ages, telling us this, telling us that, threatening us with this, threatening us with that. We explained our situation very calmly and politely. We said this is pure discrimination. Nobody else in this whole building has to undergo all these body searches. Why should we be singled out? We said it's intimidating and it's an abuse of power. She went and told the judge all this. She came back. The judge says, if you just get your shoes and socks searched. Anyway, we said, no, we're not being searched. What finally happened? We went and the judge called us into the courtroom. They said, you can't go into the courtroom unless you're searched. But the judge took us, said, you can come to the door. So the door of the courtroom was opened. There were lots of security guards there. And the judge spoke to us from her dais while we stood by the door. And she said, I've got two options. She said, I can adjourn the hearing. My second option is to issue an arrest warrant for you, and I'm very happy to write the arrest warrant now. I'll get the police in. They'll take you away. They'll charge you. They will bring you back, and they will forcibly search you. And then you can come into the courtroom. And she said, this is because you are under bail and you are bailed to appear at the court. And if you don't come into the courtroom, you're actually breaking your bail conditions, and I will have you arrested for that. It didn't matter the fact that we'd come all the way. I mean, we had to set off at 4 o'clock that morning, cost us a fortune in petrol and everything. Didn't matter the fact we'd actually come to the court all fully prepared, ready to go into the court. The fact that we'd not wanted to be searched, body searched yet again, meant that apparently we'd broken our bail
Well,
conditions.
you were being prevented from going into the court.
Yes, absolutely. We tried to talk to the judge about it. She wouldn't hear it. That's it, out. So we went out and we had to spend ages talking, arguing about it and this and that. As usual, one of us buckled, the second one buckled, the third one buckled, the fourth one didn't, but in the end had to agree because we had to be a team. We had to stick together. So we all gave in. We all went into the court. We had the pretrial hearing and afterwards, I managed to actually speak to the judge in the courtroom. I explained our situation. I said it is discriminatory. Why, of all the people in the court, we are the only people who are being discriminated and had to go through these extra body searches, about it being intimidating, abuse of power, and all that. And she really wasn't interested at all, and just again said about if this happens again, this is what will happen.
Can you tell me the
I will
name of
call
the
the police.
judge? Who is this judge that seems to
Judge,
think that it's okay to bar you from the court and then have you arrested for not attending the court?
this was a judge called Judge Hobson. I guess she gave us Hobson's choice, but yeah, that was Judge Hobson's.
What was her
So
first name?
what a lot of people think is the reasoning behind this is that they want the jury to think that we're dangerous people. So it's a case of intimidating us and trying to pervert the course of justice by affecting the way the jury see us. This is what we've been informed is what's behind it. The judge.
Have you had any media and press reporting on this at all?
No, because they never report on anything. There's no media or press reporting on anything to do with Palestine.
Have you informed the press, the local press, the national press, that you're hearing, of your hearing dates?
No, because we don't inform the press with anything. We've learned through bitter experience there is no such thing as local newspapers these days. The other news outlets that are available to us will not have anything to do with Palestine whatsoever. We've informed them of protests, of marches, of all sorts of things. They never touch it with
Well,
a bar.
I would suggest that it's a good idea to inform them whether or not they turn up, just for the record. And also, as the public mood changes, as it does, and sometimes they'll think, well, we haven't been to 10 of their hearings. It's about time we went to one.
Well, yeah, I'll certainly try, but I've learned through bitter cost that the media don't want to know anything to do with Palestine.
Well, I think some of them do and some of them don't, is all I'll say, you know. Anyhow, so can you just explain? I mean, that sounds to me. So what happened in this hearing then?
Well, this was a normal hearing about the CPS have got to produce their skeleton argument, and we've got a certain date by which we've got to produce our discussion on it and our points on it and discuss our response to it. It's got to be in by a certain date. And that was basically what it was all about. You know,
okay,
just
and have you got a trial date yet?
Yeah, for that trial, it's the 5th of August. For our first trial, which is the Shenstone Sticks, it's the 24th of June. And we're trying to get as much support outside the court as we can for the 24th of June. So if anyone can possibly come to the court to show your support for us.
Which court? Where is it?
At Stafford Crown Court, 9 o'clock on the 24th of June. And any support you can give by just turning up there for the morning would be really appreciated.
What is it, do you think, that makes direct action in this sort of situation worthwhile? Because most people will say, well, actually, you know, I might write to my MP, but I'm not sure there's any point. Why is direct action any different?
Direct action, since 1948, people have been doing all the normal, peaceful, staying within the guidelines that are laid down by the government. They've been writing to their MPs, peaceful marches, protests, all that stuff. None of it, as you can see very clearly, none of it since 1948 has made any difference. Palestine Action, in their actions against Elbit, this Israeli war company that is manufacturing all these weapons to slaughter the Palestinians with, had 10 factories in this country. We've closed down two of those factories and the HQ at 77 Kingsway in London by our constant non-stop barrage of actions we've taken against them. So we are literally one of the most effective means of affecting and making a difference for Palestine that there is, that have been ever since 1948. I know it's a proud boast to make, but I do really feel that's genuinely true. We are having more effect than almost any other form of protest or action.
Well, without getting too much into the internecine arguments in the courtroom, there is such a thing as a greater crime. So there should be, and there has been certainly in the past in British law. So, for example, let's just paint a picture in our minds of you and I, Nick, in a bar. We start to have an argument. I pull out a gun. I threaten to kill you, and someone else who maybe is a friend of mine actually kicks me in the stomach very hard at that point. Now, what he's done there is he's possibly potentially saved your life from an attempted murder. And so it would seem insane, ridiculous to prosecute him for that. But it seems like that equivalent of that is what's being done to you, because this genocide, and it absolutely is a genocide going on in Gaza right now, has led to the deaths of somewhere between 50,000 and possibly up to 120, 130,000 civilians, and it has a very nasty genocidal racist nature to it, where young Israelis are talking about things like we must kill their offspring, so because those offspring may grow up to be our enemy. This is most definitely a genocidal statement, and there are genocidal statements being made by the Israelis all the time. So why is it that the court is prosecuting you rather than patting you on the back and letting you go on your way for stopping a greater crime?
Well, I think the problem is that basically this government, we've got a Zionist government that is controlled by Israel. Starmer is an avowed Zionist. He's recently avowed that he's a Zionist. It's interesting because he was partially responsible for the downfall of Corbyn, the destruction of Corbyn, amongst with all the media smearing of him for these false anti-Semitism claims. When Corbyn went, there were 10 Labour hopefuls put forward from which they were going to vote and elect a new leader of the Labour Party. Starmer wasn't even on that list. All of a sudden, Starmer has leapfrogged this whole lot, and all of a sudden, he's leader of the Labour Party. Well, what funded, what happened? He was massively funded, and he hid this for as long as he could. He was massively funded, basically, by Israel. Israel wanted him to be the top of the Labour Party. Israel could not tolerate the thought of Corbyn, someone who's pro-Palestinian, being elected as Prime Minister of the country. So they oversaw his downfall, amongst obviously the establishment who were frightened of him as well, the Conservative Party and industry and big industry. So anyway, Starmer's now leader of the Labour Party. The Zionists wanted him in power. So for the next 3 or 4 years, they gradually proceeded, because they control the media, to produce scandal after scandal about the Conservative Party. And by the time the election came, there'd been so many scandals about the Conservative Party, nobody was going to vote for the Conservative Party. And there was no one else to vote for. So inevitably, there was no other option. Everyone voted for the Labour. And we think we live in a democracy. The whole thing was managed to get Labour in. So now the Zionists have Keir Starmer in charge of the country. He's their puppet. He's been bought and paid for. He will do exactly as he's told. And him and his cronies, there's so much money to be made in arms and everything. They cannot pour weapons fast enough into Israel. I think in the last 4 months, they've quadrupled behind through the back door, basically, the amount of arms sales going into Israel. And it's quite horrific what they're doing. They couldn't care less about humanity or about suffering or justice or international law or anything like that. All they're interested in is doing everything to support the Zionist movement and get more weapons into Israel to kill more and more innocent people. It's just horrific. There's no humanity in what they do.
No, you're quite right. I just wonder. I mean, it doesn't seem to be any end in sight to the mass murder that's going on at the moment. If this is allowed to continue, how do you see it developing?
Well, I mean, we all love to think there's a shining white in knight armor waiting in the wings to charge in to rescue the Palestinians. There is no such thing. There is nobody in the wings waiting to charge in to rescue the Palestinians. Everybody is too frightened. They're too shy. Nobody will touch it with a barge pole. I don't think there's anything. The trouble is, Israel has such power throughout America. AIPAC rules America. In this country, our Zionist government rules. No one can really challenge that power. I think gradually more and more people are becoming aware. There is more and more pushback against it, but there is so much power that the governments, the police, and the courts have in this country, and so much power that AIPAC and Trump, who himself is a Zionist, has in America. I don't honestly see how it's going to stop.
Well, it's worrying because the injustice, the massive injustices, the evil being perpetrated in Israel, it's almost as if it's got its sort of shadow effect here in Britain, where it's also setting the people against the government. So there's quite clearly amongst the public an absolute disgust at what the Israelis are up to, and a desire for the British government in a democracy to stop it, but they're not. So this is actually setting up a kind of civil war type situation in Britain too.
Well, I wish it would come to civil war, but the problem we have in this country, we've been so used to being crushed and put down and frightened by the government that most of the people in this country are so compliant. There's very few people like me and others like Palestine actually are brave enough to actually dare to step out the government laid down guidelines of what you can do to legally protest and what you can't. People are so frightened that unless they learn to get out of their comfort zones and step outside these prescribed guidelines, they're never going to stop this
Well,
genocide.
maybe you could say something about what you're quite happy to freely admit that you've done in order to bring this to the public's attention.
Basically, I'm very lucky. I have an ability. I've climbed up on the roof of the Shenstone factory of Elbit, where they make the drone engines, and as I said, we've caused £90,000 worth of damage on that roof, and we shut down that factory for almost 2 weeks. So we stopped production in that factory, those drone engines, for 2 weeks. We disrupted the horrific supply chain. Now, I'm 73 years old. I've never done anything like that in my life. Up until the age of nearly 69, I barely even knew what a policeman looked like. I've never been in trouble. I've been a regular standard man, had my kids, gotten through university, ran my business, nose to the grindstone, paid my mortgage and bills and all the rest of it. So for me to climb up on the roof of a factory and start smashing windows is completely out of character. But when I was up on that factory roof, smashing those windows, I didn't have any qualms about it because I knew the machinery that came out of those factories, the horrors, the death and the suffering that those machines caused. So no, I didn't have any qualms about breaking those windows and trying to shut that factory down for as long as I could. About 6 months later, one of the other things I did, I climbed up a 380-foot tower crane right next to the American embassy. And I got to the top of the crane and I flew the Palestine. I took a huge Palestine flag up with me and I flew the Palestine flag from the top of this crane and I stayed up there for 2.5 days. The whole of that area of London was shut down, caused absolute consternation, and it was a big event. Now, the interesting thing was that this event was publicized in Russia Today, Press TV, Middle East Eye, Middle East Monitor, Al Jazeera's. It was published all over the world. But do you know what? There's one tiny little article in one newspaper in England. It was completely unmentioned in England. It got no publicity at all. So yes, that's something else I've done. And then a third thing we did, the whole object of us is to disrupt the supply chain. And so we attacked one of the supply chain factories that transport all the arms and weapons, because you can't just put those arms and weapons in a paper bag and send them off. They had to be very carefully packaged and shipped and transported. And so we attacked one of the companies that does all that. And we're charged with doing £138,000 worth of damage to the roof of that factory. So yet again, we delayed, we broke that supply chain. We stopped that supplying of weapons and arms to Israel for a little time.
Nick,
So
if people are interested in this sort of thing and interested in following it, maybe even joining Palestine Action, whereabouts can they go?
they can go online, look up Palestine Action online. They've got a very good website. And I think the crucial thing is we're not asking everybody to do the sort of thing that I'm talking about. Palestine Action, it's like the British Army. To keep one soldier in the field, you have to have a whole pyramid of support underneath it. So Palestine Action needs so much support. We need people to do court support, to turn up and support our activists when they go to court. We need people to do police station support. So when they're arrested, they're waiting outside. So when the police kick them out 3, 4 o'clock in a pitch black freezing cold morning, when they've taken all their money and car keys and everything, we're there to support them, to feed them, to give them transport, to take them to a train station, to put them up for the night. We need people to write to them in prison. I think there's 28 of our members are in prison at the moment. Most of them haven't even been to trial. They've not been convicted of anything, and they're just being held in prison 2 years, some of them, waiting, just waiting to go to court.
I mean, this is absolutely horrific. Nick Georges, thanks very much for joining us.
You're more than welcome. All the best to you, and thank you for reporting what's actually going on, as opposed to most of our media.